I just want to say thank you to the organizers for letting me in here. Hi, Robin. And I'm going to talk to you about a slightly different approach of granular or dense amorphous packings that we call jamming. And I want to briefly define what I mean by jamming. And I'm going to present a summary of some earlier results on jamming phenomena in the systems we've studied, and probe the critical nature of this transition. And then towards the end of my talk, if I overrun, then just tell me to jump to the fun stuff at the end. And this is, of course, work done in collaboration with Sid Nagel and Andrea Liu. And these are the people that have either helped earlier on or are useful in discussion, and the guys that pay, the people that pay me. So let me give you a kind of introduction to what I mean by jamming. Basically, I listed a whole range of different physical, very wide variety of physical systems, and the pictures on the left are kind of representative of the types of systems I want you to bear in mind when I talk about jamming. This is one of Doug's pictures at the top on a foam. This is an alternative to the crashing silo problem. This is one of those phenomenal experimental pictures taken by Eric Weeks' group, and this is simulation of a supercool liquid from Glotz's group. But essentially what I want to get across is that even though there's a wide range of systems listed here, they all undergo some form of jamming transition if you tune the control parameters, if you pick the right control parameters. For example, in the case of dispersions and granular materials, we know that the systems are just going to sit there until you apply some external force in effect. They have some kind of yield stress, and you have to exceed that before you'll go from a solid jam state into a fluid or flowing-like state. In the case of colloidal systems, we know that you can ramp up the packing fraction of colloidal particles in suspension, and you'll undergo a liquid to solid transition that we call the colloidal glass transition. And more traditionally, the type of systems that have been studied for many years are supercool liquids, when you quench the system down into a solid. We end up with an amorphous solid that we usually call a glass. So from an experimental point of view, the issue is that it's very difficult to define the or locate the exact glass transition temperature or yield stress for the type of material that you're interested in, and the nature of the transition is not fully well understood. So we want to try and find a system that exhibits a nice jamming transition that kind of captures the features are representative of the types of systems listed here. and if we can do that, we can then go ahead and try and analyze the nature of the transition in our model system and see how well it relates to other systems, to more realistic systems. So I'm just going to explain this is jamming in a model system. I'm going to start off at zero temperature and zero friction, and these are soft particles that interact only in contact through a finite range, purely repulsive force. So you just imagine it's just a model frictionless granular material packing of spheres, and I'm going to sample lots of static packings of particles, and the focus is on 3D. So this is just a picture of what the potential would look like. All the data I'm going to show you today are just for linear spring interactions between particles. And we got a flavor for jamming yesterday in a couple of talks yesterday morning. And this is kind of just a 2D visualization of what I mean by jamming. I have particles which I colored white, indicating they have no contact neighbors. And then I'm just isotropically squeezing the box around them. And they remain out of contact for a long time, and then suddenly at some instant they'll all come into contact at a very well-defined packing fraction. So I essentially just increased the packing fraction, and I want to emphasize that so we define this jamming transition from a say a liquid-like non-contacting state to a jammed solid state, there's a very well-defined packing fraction phi c for each configuration that I look at. And I can do the same thing over here on the right. So I came from below at low volume fractions. I can also squeeze the hell out of my system and then decrease the packing fraction, and the same thing will happen. But to summarize some of the earlier results, we can characterize that jamming transition very nicely. And one of the nicest signatures has been found in the coordination number, which I show here schematically. As you saw in the little movie before, below the jamming critical volume fraction phi c, the coordination number remains identically zero. And then at this particular packing fraction, there's a finite jump in the coordination number. And then if I continue to squeeze the particles, increase the packing fraction, then there'll be some slow growth of the excess coordination number above this critical value of the coordination number ZC. Up here. Yeah, I'm just about to explain it. You're jumping ahead. It's a power law curve, as explained here. It's just, you know, a priori, we didn't choose any parameters to fit this data or the real data. But it turns out from the simulations, if you fit the data above this jamming point, then you find that the excess coordination number grows as a square root of the distance from your transition packing fraction, phi minus phi c, and remains identically zero below it. And the parameters that come out is that the critical packing critical coordination number is 6 in 3D, and the packing fraction is 64%, which you'll recognize as the isostatic value for frictionless spheres, and the value often quoted for random closed packings of particles. Also, we can measure other quantities like the pressure and the shear modulus, and these again follow nice power law robust. I'm not showing the data today, but they follow nice robust power law behavior once you squeeze this, once you're above the packing fraction. So technically, the way I've approached this problem is I started from a high packing fraction that's incrementally gone down towards the critical volume fraction, phi c. So I want to emphasize again that the important measure is actually not the absolute value of the packing fraction, but the distance from its kind of critical-like point, phi c. And from the coordination number, we see already that there's some interest. It kind of resembles an order parameter in a sense, that there seems to be like a first-order nature jump at the critical point, and then a continuous second-order-like power law behavior above the critical value phi c. And so it kind of hints to us that there is a mix of kind of transition-like behavior going on. And I'm going to go ahead and show you that we've identified a diverging correlation length or characteristic length scale, which does indeed suggest the nature of the transition is second order. So the way I'm going to go about this is by doing a normal mode analysis. But just by experience and looking at the way the shear modulus behaves around the critical point, around the packing, the jamming threshold phi c, we already suspect that there's something funny going on with our system. So all I want to remind you is that the density of states for a 3D solid from your solid state textbook usually follows the Debye theory of crystals, which in the limit of low frequency, your histogram of frequencies, density of states will go as a frequency squared. And if you carry this argument through, then you expect that the specific heat will go as a temperature to the third power. And these are just representative pictures. If I do my dynamical matrix and compute the density of states, I can get all the information out I need about these packings. And these are the lowest frequency eigenvectors of my configurations. And this is just a crystal. And as you see some well-defined phonon modes. If I'm at a packing fraction well away from the transition, from the jamming threshold, and I squeeze the hell out of it, then I still see some remnant or some semblance of well-defined phonon modes in my system. But as I approach jamming transition threshold, then I start to see these modes are just completely a complete mess, and I lose all character of this concept of a phonon in these systems, all the by character. So I can characterize, instead of looking at pictures, I can characterize it a bit more systematically, and the way we've done that is by looking at density of states, and this shows a really nice clear signature of the jamming onset of the jamming threshold. And I show you here log-log plots of the density of states. The thick black line is what you'd is omega squared you'd expect for Debye theory, and the curves start from down here for very compressed systems, and I'm incrementally decreasing the packing fraction towards its jamming threshold. And the black line, top black line up here, I've indicated as isostatic, is for the system closest to the jamming threshold. So I'm 10 to the minus 8 in a packing fraction away from phi c in this case. And as you expect, in the squeezed case, the system captures the Debye theory for these system sizes. But as you decrease the packing fraction towards the jamming threshold, there's a dramatic excess of low frequency modes in the system. Until ultimately that the density of states appears to approach a constant value in the limit of zero frequency. Yes. Yes, I do ensemble averages over the same phi minus phi c. No, I have to find it for each initial configuration, starting point, yeah. So the system is becoming extremely soft as you approach the isostatic, I call it the isostatic point, the jamming threshold, and it really just wants to fall apart. I've plotted an alternative way just by dividing by the frequency squared, and the reason I've done that is to kind of like hint that the kind of features that we see here for our simple model seems to capture features often seen in the problem of glasses. Yes. 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 Well, for the frictionless case, it doesn't. Okay. It doesn't really matter how you create the frictionless packings. Oh, well, I mean, you listened to Sal's talk yesterday. Yeah, I mean, I am strictly looking at amorphous packings. So there's not. Well, the way this study was originally done is that we just sampled the whole phase space of amorphous packings. You could create ordered systems, but they would be in the tails of these distributions, well away from the parameter space I'm looking at. Just consider these as all amorphous packings, and these values of phi c for the individual configurations are all roughly the same. Sorry. Yeah, these are 3D monodisperse. I just wanted to hint that this is the type of plot you'd see in a glass paper, and people often call this this kind of peak up here. If I could go to even bigger system sizes, if I had a real glass, I'd have a peak and then it'd flatten off. But people call this kind of feature a boson peak. And it turns out that in our system, in the limit of the jamming threshold, as I go towards the jamming threshold, these different colored curves, I find that the position of the peak shifts to zero and shifts to the left and increases in magnitude. And so if you take the density of states as a constant and again follow that argument through, then you would say that the specific heat should go linearly with temperature, and this is what is found in the case of low temperature glasses. So again, this simple model seems to capture features often seen in very different systems. So what I want to do now is I want to define a characteristic frequency. I'm going to call omega star, and you can define it in a number of ways, but we can say it's the frequency, say, at which these curves depart from the straight line, or how my systems deviate from the isostatic state. I'm going to define my frequencies like that, and if I plot that as a function of phi minus phi c, I find this follows a pretty good power law, a square root power law, over several orders of magnitude. And the way I want to get a length scale out of this is I'm going to take the Fourier transform of the eigenvectors at the value of this frequency omega star and look for the dominant wave vector k star. And this is just related to the length scale I'm going to call zeta. And if I go through that for all my different systems at different values of phi minus phi c, then I find we've managed to extend dynamic quite a bit recently. I find a divergent characteristic length scale to the 1 over 4 power, which suggests we can extract a characteristic length scale in our system, and it does appear to diverge, suggesting that the nature of the transition is consistent with the second order. And this is kind of nice, actually. We realize this, we're a bit slow up in Chicago, it's probably the winters that freeze our heads, but we realize that this is consistent with the speed of sound argument. If we take the different power law exponents for the behavior of omega star and the speed of sound, which is proportional to the square root of the shear modulus, which again has its own exponent, we find that this characteristic length scale power law exponent is consistent with this argument from the other data and appears to be independent of potential. Some of these results are presented in something available, and it also starts to smell of something like a universality class. But this is all done for, up to now, I've just discussed frictionless systems, and I have some, the rest of the talk, a few minutes. I have the rest of the morning. I want to just briefly present some preliminary results on frictional packings, or compare with frictional packings. And I've managed to create frictional packings. This is pretty much very similar to the way Maxi has done recently. And all I'm going to show you here is the scaling of a coordination number. The black symbols are my frictionless, zero friction case. But if you fit your data, so in the zero friction case, the numbers I get out for my ZCs and phi Cs are pretty much exactly the same as my previous values I showed you earlier. And so I get the square root increase in my excess coordination number as a function of phi minus phi c, but in the frictional case, you won't be surprised to hear, it's a real pain, and I feel that the value, the fitting parameters I get out for these critical coordination numbers and packing fractions are really badly history dependent. But if you fit the data and you trust these parameters, then the all the different curves sit on the same square root increase. With the proviso that these numbers are not unique. As soon as you switch on friction, these numbers are not unique, as they are in the frictionless case. And I've managed to fudge my way through density of states calculation with friction. This is the frictionless case up here. The blue curve is for a squeeze system. The red curve is for a system which is much closer to the jamming threshold. And in general, the trend is the same when you switch on friction, that you get this excess low frequency modes as you approach the jamming threshold. So let me just go to the fun stuff. Okay, that's my summary. But the fun stuff is more important, it's more fun. And we saw some nice experiments results recently, the last few days. And I think the whole issue is related to, you know, everyone's doing different things about force perturbations and probing particle packings, but I think they all probe the same thing. And I think the features we see in the density of states and the nature of the packings might kind of embody that. But we can do something different and play with probing particle packings And this is a 2D frictionless system where I'm not showing the particles. It's just below the jamming threshold. I'm not showing the particle centers. I'm just showing the contacts between them, and the colors just indicate the magnitude of the forces. And if I'm going to drag this guy and just pull him down, and as you can see, even though it's 100 by 100, at some point the propagation of the forces will cross the boundaries. But it's kind of interesting that you see the generation and propagation of the forces through your system. But 2D, everyone's done 2D. So why don't we do 3D? So we can do the same. This is my last slide, pretty much. This is zero friction. I can do this exactly the same thing. I prepared particle packings just below this same distance from phi c, just below the jamming threshold. I'm going to drag a particle through my system. It's only a 10 by 10 by 10 system, so it's pretty small. But I can see that in the zero friction case, it has a pretty hard time being dragged through. So, you know, I mean, this is all kind of fun stuff. And you can do the same with the frictional case. And, I mean, simply due to the virtue that the packet, even though the two packings are the same distance from phi c, their respective phi c's, simply due to the fact that this is lower in packing fraction, it has a much easier time being pulled through the system. I mean, and you can characterize that by plotting curves. But it's all very preliminary data, but it's fun. And I'll leave up that slide.
Why don't we give Bob the first try?
So a quick comment, which is we've done something very similar to what you showed in your fun experiment in the last slide, which was done in 2D as a function of density, and you do see something which is reminiscent of a critical transition, and the exponent that you measure for the force of an intruder is 3 halves power in density minus density critical. That's a 2D experiment.
Right. I mean, this is very preliminary. I haven't studied it as a function of density, but yeah, it would be nice to see if I could get something similar coming out. And using the simulations, maybe I could measure other things that would characterize it even more fully.
Okay. Sal.
So we're in the infancy in being able to describe, quantify randomness. You used the idea of most probable states in the case of 3 dimensions. When you get 64%, which is a very well-defined value, you associate that with the epitome of disorder. Now, if let's say you instead did the 2-dimensional experiment with monodispersed disks, of course, the typical configuration is going to be much more ordered, very, very close to the triangular lattice, and as I said yesterday, not even collectively jammed would it say 9%. So you would be led to the conclusion that the epitome of disorder was the triangular lattice. Can you comment on that?
Yes. Firstly, I never used the phrase epitome of disorder today. Secondly, I didn't show any data.
That's the title of your paper.
Not this paper today. And secondly, I didn't show any 2D data today. In the 2D case, it's not absolutely clear if we did. We haven't done this, and I don't know if how definite the answer is. But even if you did quench 2D monodispersed systems, it's not. Even though the system might look ordered by eye, it might the contact network itself might not be as ordered as the system looks. So you might actually, instead of having six neighbors in the 2D case, they might only have 4. So it might remain isostatic. It's not. We haven't done. All right. In 2D, I mean, it would have. It might, instead of having 6 as you would expect for a triangular lattice, it might actually have less than 6. You'd have to go in and really measure it. But we haven't done that. So I mean, it is an interesting point. But I don't know the answer. Oh. All right. No, No, I agree that the 2D case is not as clear cut, but I don't think it's been clearly it's been done fully. And the data I show in the density of states, what's important about that is the feature that you get a flat density of states in the limit of zero frequency purely comes from the number of contact, the coordination number. So if indeed you do the 2D system and it looks like an ordered lattice, but really it doesn't have six neighbors, they have four, the average coordination number is less than six, then you might start to see a similar trend. And again, it depends on the protocol that you use to generate it. But I mean, it's not a clear-cut issue, sure.
Yes, I think that this way of analyzing the jamming transition as a critical phenomena is very promising. But I have some problems because phi is a scalar quantity, and mechanics is essentially tensorial. In the 80s, there was a lot of attempts to analyze, for example, the mechanical response of a honeycomb lattice when cutting links. And the problem was mapped onto a percolation problem. And the parameter was the number of links. And finally, this approach failed because it is disregarded the tensorial aspect of mechanics. So, what are your opinion about that?
I'm not sure, really. I think, no, you're right. I mean, you can characterize the packings with the packing fraction. I think the way I would look at it is, again, by what we've learned over the last few months is you want to look at the coordination number, because this kind of gives you an indication of how stable the system is. You know, for each configuration, I can't tell you how, if I pushed here, I can't tell you how it's going to respond, but I can probably tell you roughly how stable it's going to be. I mean, whether it's going to fall apart and fail, or whether it's going to remain static. I mean, that's as far as I can go. I mean, you know, the only thing you can do is just do a statistical ensemble average.
Yes.
You're never going to be able to.
But the property of being jammed or not may or cannot depend on the solicitation.
Well, I mean, if you regard this jamming threshold, this jamming point, if you consider it as a second order transition, then you know the critical nature of it means that it might control the region around it. So, I mean, you know, you hope you can say something a little bit general, as long as you're kind of remain within the range where this jamming idea applies.
I have to say that for the frictional system, and not for the stuff, the frictional system, I mean, I'm not very optimistic simply because you show these math state results, and so they explain that if you go from frictional closer to 0.51, you get close to some kind of critical point. But almost nothing changes in granular flow if you go from a frictional closer to 0.51. So that's that's rather difficult. And the Moxie way of analyzing the data is audacious.
Well, that was my own data. I just want to emphasize that. It was my own stuff.
Thank you.
At any moment, I think at this stage, we can transition from asking questions simply of Leo to asking questions of the other speakers at this point, John, Gary, as well.
Yeah, the only comment I had to make was that as far as 2D and 3D is concerned, we see disordered states as defined by free volume, Voronoi free volume distributions. And we can very easily discern between the crystallized and the disordered states over there. And they're very distinct as far as their free volume distributions are concerned,
okay,
both in 2D and in 3D. So.
Okay. Gary, did you still have a comment? Or? Okay.
Why don't we start back over here and work our way?
First, I just want to comment on what John said about the scalar quantity. I think for this type of situation, it's not so bleak because, for instance, if you look at, if you kind of generalize analysis a little bit, look at polydisperse mixtures, and you can show kind of, for instance, in two dimensions for polydisperse disks, you can show that generically it will be rigid based on accounting. So if you just look at the rank of the rigidity matrix, you can show that basically you can tell whether it's rigid or not just by kind of a scalar. And that kind of brings me to my second point regarding what you're showing, which is I think maybe focusing on phi minus phi c is a little bit, you might get better understanding if you focus on the number of contacts. So for instance, when we did perturbations about the isostatic point, the number of elastic moments is just exactly the number of extra contacts. Right. So if you wanted to understand, for instance, you know, different shapes or polydispersed mixtures, it might not be the... It might not be phi minus phi c, and I think particularly in your frictional case, where you're probably not many times you're not right on phi
right.
on zc rather. It might be better to kind of lump your data together as z minus zc rather than phi minus phi c.
No, yeah. I mean, I mean that's again, you know, we've been thinking about this a bit harder this year, and we realize that the excess coordination number plays a crucial role in all of this. So it might be worthwhile to change your focus of attention to maybe Z rather than phi. It might be a better way to characterize the packets in that sense, sure. But it really does seem to play a very fundamental role in the stability of the packets and the number of excess modes, whether it looks soft or whether it looks elastic. Right? Right.
The other, just the comment is to connect back to collapse flows. I mean, in that case, ZC minus C. ZC minus Z seems to be going to 4 right. when you approach the transition from the other side, and that also can be linked to a diverging length scale. So, you know, there may be some hidden transition behind that. Igor.
I have a question for you about... very beginning of his talk. So I think you mentioned that you use particles with soft interaction.
Yes.
Yeah, then in this situation, you should have a problem with the definition of number of contacts, because you have soft contacts and hard contacts.
What do you mean by hard contacts?
No, but if you have soft interaction, then they, because
yes.
contacts are not quite the same.
Yeah, when the particles overlap, they're in contact, and when they're not overlapping, they're not in contact. There's no force between them.
But what, how the potential looks like?
Oh, it's just I was just using for this stuff. It was just a Hooke linear spring, but we've done it for Hertzian like contacts, and you see exactly the same behavior.
Mm-hmm. So it's not really hardcore, which...
Oh no, it's not hardcore. They're soft spheres.
Thank you. Leo, can you comment on the relationship between your omega star and this characteristic frequency and the density of states? Relationship for that time scale to something that may be more readily observable, like a stress relaxation time. So when I did simulations like these a while ago now, I saw similar power laws versus phi minus phi c for Schur modulus and so forth. I also saw stress relaxation time would diverge as you go towards phi c.
I mean, it's a nice point. The fact that we can find extract a correlation length doesn't mean I know what the hell it is, what it really corresponds to. But I believe, I mean, maybe something. It's some relaxation time of. Say if you. Now, if you perturb the system or something, it might be a time scale related to how the system responds to when you perturb it. It's something that's not quite, you know, clicking with me, because we've had a hard time trying to identify a length scale in the first place anyway. And
I meant just the time scale.
No, yeah, but I mean, you know, we haven't done any dynamics, so you know, I haven't actually probed the question of timescales, but I mean, it's something that it would be nice to do, but it's something like a stress relaxation time in a sense. You know, if we applied a perturbation and then looked at the time it took to relax the system, it might something like that.
Okay, over here,
I showed them. Wouldn't you look in? It depends how far away you are from the isostatic point.
Go close.
What?
Go close.
Show it again. This time, pay attention. Crystal, very far away from Jamming threshold, very close to Jamming threshold. The black lines are the...
I don't see anything. What does that mean?
Good. That's very good. You don't... If you compare this to this, they're completely different. Good answer. Basically, the modes are a very big mess, and they're not very well characterized. They don't look like anything. Yes. Well, look. Well, I mean, looking at the pictures, go blind. But I mean, if you look at the, you can characterize it better by looking at the Fourier transform of these pictures, and basically these are just dynamical structure factors, and so you know your peak, your intensity decreases and shifts to the right the further away from the jamming threshold you go. So I mean that's. And so this peak just indicates the dominant feature of that eigenvector. Mm-hmm. So that's the only way we can characterize it. And trust me, I've tried lots of things, but that's the only... I mean, the eigenvectors, they contain all the information you need about your packing.
Leo, the mode structure you showed looks to me very similar to the sort of nonifying displacements you get following an infinitesimal step string.
Yeah, no, so I haven't done any of that, but there is a growing community trying to relate or project the nonifying displacement fields and relate them to the eigenmodes in your low frequency eigenmodes, and there's one of the experts sitting over here. Well, there's two of them. That's the other guy.